Did you know that 90% of the world's millionaires invest in real estate? Well, I'm Angel with the Academy Presents Real Estate Investing Rocks, and I'm here to help you if you want to go for your piece of that pie. Are you new? Are you new to this and you just don't know where to start? It's okay. Are you someone that has invested, but you feel stuck? You feel like you've lost momentum. You don't know where to really head from here. Are you a seasoned real estate investor who is doing great, but maybe you just want to hone a few skills here and there? This is the place for you. The Academy Presents Real Estate Investing Rocks podcast will connect you with industry experts so that you can save time, avoid costly mistakes, and begin living the life you've dreamed of, all through real estate investing. You're already taking the first step just by joining us here today. Hey guys, thank you so much for being here and for being a part of this summit. It's just awesome. I've said it like every single time I think I get on here that these are my six favorite days of the year, and I'm super glad that you're a part of it. And I am super glad that we get to hear from Janet Fields, because she and I have been chatting a little bit here before we started recording, and I think this is going to be truly amazing because I already heard stuff that I'm like, that would be really awesome. So I'm super excited to hear what she has to share with us. And Janet, I'm going to kind of toss it over to you and let you tell us a little bit about your background and what you can bring to us today.
Yes. Well, I'm Janet Fields, CEO of Oak Trust Properties down in Charleston, South Carolina. I pretty much was born into the business, grew up around real estate just through osmosis. I learned a lot about business when I didn't even know I was learning about it. I bought my first book of business in 2014, worked alongside my father doing a DBA as his company. Eventually, we did another acquisition, and then we joined forces, brought all the businesses together, and recently I just bought him out. So now I'm just one big sole company owner. I have about a dozen people who work for me, and we manage about 600 properties. I have many other businesses I'd like to get started in the next 3 to 5 years, and they're all feed off of real estate. And I'm super pumped about that.
Yeah, no. And when I think about other things that we've done, like when we decided we were going to start doing summits, I called a friend of mine and he was like, oh yeah, it's just coordinating people. And thank God I was dumb enough to believe him. It was not just coordinating people, but if he hadn't made me think it was easier than it is, we wouldn't be on number six.
Yeah.
So I've been having this conversation with several people here lately, and it's like, what's the actual success rate in some of these educational programs? What is the actual success rate in people's ability to scale? What's the actual success rate in people being able to take down their first deal? And you start looking at those things, and if you actually shared with people what the true success rates were, people probably would never get into those programs.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not, it's not super high.
No.
And so like, there's a group of us that are like, why not be for real about it? Why not say not everybody can do this? This is hard. Why not be upfront and honest about those things instead of saying, oh yeah, anybody can do this. I mean, I guess anybody can do this, but not everybody can do this.
I think it's how many kicks in the teeth can you take? I really feel like that has to do with it. What is it? Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Somebody else says, hurry up and fail fast. Fail 10 times. So along the 11th, you'll be successful. Like, that's what it is it's the trial and error. And how much shit can you take before you give up? A lot of people are afraid to try the first time, but somebody who's like risk averse or totally okay with risk, they're like, yeah, I'm going to do all this. It's no big deal. Let's go. And everybody else is like, what? And you're like, well, I'm investing in it. I'm supporting. Let's go. And they're like, okay, crazy. Let's go. And then you just, make your way. And that's pretty much how I've gone through life so far.
Well,
it's a really fun ride.
After the last 3 weeks, I would never, ever, ever want to do property management ever. It was hard. Doing it over time, I'm sure it gets easier. It's like anything else. But that experience I had with it, not fun.
The fires that come up are hard to deal with when they come up, and they seem to come up in multiples, so all at the same time. And then when you get into really tricky conversations and all your like the back of your head is like litigation, litigation, litigation. And you're like, oh God, do I need to get the lawyer in on this one? Or do I have it for like the first, you know, internet or exchanges? Yeah. But every one of those interactions, you're like adding to your library of knowledge, and it helps you get through the rest, and then you can share with your team. I learn a lot. And with the mass amount of numbers we have, we learn so quickly.
So are you in one area of the U.S., in one city of the U.S.? Are you in multiple places?
I am in Charleston, South Carolina, in a really small footprint. And before 2020, I had decided that if a property was more than 20 minutes drive time per Google Maps, we're not going there. That's 20 minutes from our office. And I want to do that because logistically it was expensive to have property managers who we pay at a certain rate to spend their time in the car. And if they had to drive to like four properties a day, single family homes, that could be 4 hours. So now we're looking at half their salary almost, you know? So logistically that didn't make sense. Enters virtual assistants and, splitting to field workers and desk workers. We became a lot more efficient that way. And looking at salaries was different, all that. But yeah, I was strategic about my footprint because of logistics, single family homes. Now, if I had all multifamily, I wouldn't probably consider that as much because we'd probably have an on-site person. But we don't even have, but maybe two or three properties in one neighborhood sometimes. So it's, and then everything's on different schedules. So location was important. I do want to scale to other places, but I have a family, so I want to keep within 2 hour time zones from my home.
No, I hear that. And like my father-in-law had 70 units, I guess they still do. He's not with us anymore, but there's still 70 units, residential multifamily, and they're all within like three streets of one another. And that's so excellent. He was able to work out a deal with a property management company where he was treated more like a multifamily. Whereas, you know, residential is usually, well, for us, industry standards, 10%. Well, he was able to negotiate like 3, 4, or 5%, which was more like a multifamily because everything mm-hmm. was close together.
Yeah. It saved everybody time and money. It was so efficient. And when you think about the footprint and logistics, I'm having to think about that now with hiring, with remote hires, when you're hiring in different countries. I've learned that when I hire in the Philippines and Mexico, not only am I working with different time zones and they're all happy to work on our timetable, but when I want to have people come together all as one big group and do an event or a photo shoot or whatever, it gets more complicated. So if I could have a condensed population in one city and then, you know, cities that I'm picking from, it's harder to find the right person, but it does make it more cost effective with taxes and easier to manage with just everything. So if you're strategic about those things and trying to like create constraints around everything in the beginning, it makes scaling a lot easier.
Wow. Well, and I mean, what is it? Stephen Covey that says that, you know, start with the end in mind.
Yes.
And you've done that. I mean, you're thinking about where you want to end up at. You don't want to end up in a situation where you're driving all over the place and you don't get to spend time with your family.
Mm-mm.
And so that's super smart.
It's taken a long time.
I hear you. No, and it's, I mean, it's just tough sometimes. And even though like you're in single family and people are like, well, why are we listening to this? It's the same thing because with you being so, with all of your properties being so close together, that's like having 600 doors in mm-hmm. a multifamily.
Yeah.
And you're still having to manage all those pieces and you're still having to manage all the maintenance calls, all the HVAC stuff, all the plumbing stuff. I mean, you're managing everything just like it was one or two apartment complexes in the same proximity, like in close proximity to one another.
Yes, yes. And we treat them all the same. And I think in some aspects, it's a little more tricky because we have the one-to-one ratio between client and resident. So there's a lot of mediation involved.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, we have six singles and we're hands-off. Let's say we're hands-off. We have property management teams and we still have to field the phone calls of, hey, the roof is leaking. How do you want us to handle it?
Yeah.
So it's a different kind of passive than multifamily passive is. Multifamily mm-hmm. passive is straight up
mailbox money. You just, oh, I got a deposit today. With single family and residential multi, you are more involved. So that was when we kind of got into both of those. That was where I realized that there's a whole array of what passive is. Mailbox money passive and passive, but you still got to feel anything over $300.
Yeah. And I almost feel like investors, when they're starting off and they're starting to build a portfolio, they want to self-manage because, for one, they're curious. They want to know where their dollars are going and how it functions. And because you bought your own property, you feel like you should manage it, right? But you don't have to.
I had no desire to do that.
Oh my gosh. That's so good.
But I grew up in, my husband and I both grew up in families that invested in residential real estate.
So you already kind of, you've seen
my grandparents self-managed, and I was like, I'm not going to be 60 years old, 65 years old, shuffling from door to door to go collect rents.
Yeah. And being on call 24/7, that's the biggest thing, is like your brain never gets a break. It's tough being on call all the time. So people self-managing, I feel like they think that's naturally the next step, but it's really not. Cause if you only have a small amount of properties, and you're just doing it as a hobby on the side, it's distracting you from the other things of where your power lies. Like, where's your highest contribution? I'm constantly asking myself that, and I'm constantly asking my team that. Like, should you be doing that? Is that your highest contribution? What could you be doing? Who does this better? Who can do this more efficiently? Like, it's always who can do it better, who can do it more efficiently. Is this right for you?
And I think the question for us was, you know, we can own a house. And we can rent it out to people, but are we going to provide the best experience for them? Probably not. Because what do we know? We know one plumber, two plumbers. The property manager probably knows 10.
Yeah.
So if the first three guys don't answer the phone, they got 7 more people to call.
And you can say, yes, I have 20 properties and I know a plumber. But if you only have 20 properties, how often are you using that plumber? And how quickly are they going to pick up the phone for you? We have a lot of small people, handymans and vendors, where we're 60 to 80% of their income. So they come and fix stuff for us. And when it doesn't go right, they pick up the phone and come back and correct it. And we already know their pricing, so we don't have to do the back and forth. So it's beneficial to us and the client and the resident. Everybody gets served quicker.
Yeah, I know. And it's one of the things that's been kind of neat about being so close to our multifamily is, we know a lot of people, but the people that we know and the people that the plumbers and electricians, all that, they're residential. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I can give you names, but they're predominantly residential. And I don't know if the insurance works the same to go commercial. I don't know if they're comfortable with that, but it's still additional people that can be called in an emergency.
Yeah, in a pinch. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been cool. And that was kind of one of the other things that I learned as, you know, my world is burning down around me was that I don't have to be at the property involved. I can share the people I know with our regional, and between the two of us, holy night, we can get some stuff done because we know tons of people that can get stuff done.
Yes. And I would almost say you being on site is not your highest contribution. Like, what are you doing there? Are you being a babysitter? Are you just taking pictures? Are you just a hand with a camera? Like, is there a cheaper hand with a camera somewhere?
Or worse than that, I'm going to start talking to somebody and get them off the job. Because I like to talk.
Same.
And so, is it detrimental? And it is sitting back and thinking, what are my skills?
Yeah.
What am I best suited for? And what does somebody else need to be doing?
Yeah. Defining that is key.
Yeah. So do you have any tricks for that one?
Well, so as we speak, my assistant is going through all of our resumes and building out a basically an Excel sheet of all of our people, doing their personality index, doing their skills, doing their licensing, doing their wants, what they enjoy and what they don't enjoy. Her work. Mm-hmm. So we have that on hand whenever we have big changes. When we have, it's like we need to do some shifts of labor because somebody turned in their 2 weeks. Like, how do we change here? Are we going to ramp up a vendor who supports our work orders that come in? Or is this person in-house? Like, how can we do this? We literally just had this, somebody turn in their 2 weeks for a different job opportunity, and now we're having a shift. So what we're going to do is we have somebody handle our emergency lines afterwards, and we can just ramp them up to 24-hour answer calls, and that person can shift into supporting a property manager. So knowing where everybody's strengths and weaknesses lie helps you make better decisions.
Yeah. So as you're talking about that, I'm like looking it up because I remember somebody else talking about this, and there's this thing called the Clifton Strengths Online Talent Assessment.
Yeah.
And I want to say that's the one, it's got like 16, markers, personality markers.
And yeah, we use Culture Index. Okay. That one's been pretty interesting. I just bought into that one this year. And before that I did Predictive Index, which was pretty cool. And it's pretty creepy how accurate it is about how people act, how people react, and how people function, honestly.
What was the culture one called?
Culture Index. It's an extremely popular one with business. Yeah. It's one of the ones
I put it into my phone because I'm on my computer. I'm like,
yeah,
that's cool.
They say this one is more scientific than the other ones, like DISC and stuff. They say not as this, but who knows who they are.
Well, but I mean, like with DISC, I know I'm like Heidi,
mm-hmm.
and then my husband one is SC, and it's but I mean, like, it's really most people are a combination of I and D or a combination of S and C. You don't see a lot of cross.
Okay.
So there's really like, I guess, four predominant personality types, maybe six if you think about the mixtures, maybe eight with the crisscross, but there's more than eight main personality types out there.
Yeah, this one has like 26, and it's like six lines, sliding scale, and each one makes like a 4-point shape, but it's pretty cool. It's been an eye-opener whenever my team took it. And then I just sat back in the office and started kind of watching how they interact. And I was like, oh my gosh, I understand this person now. Now they don't make me crazy. Now I can put them in a box and now I can move forward with them much better.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, I had somebody a few weeks ago said, hey, do you know this person? I'm like, oh, they make me crazy. But when I interact with that person one-on-one, it's like talking to somebody completely different.
Yeah.
So and I don't know if... It were in groups with people that set this particular person off and put them on the defense or on a different kind of personality bend. I don't know.
You just don't match. We did, when we were doing the culture index, there's actually like cheat sheets. It says, okay, when you do this person get together, this person should listen because this person likes to talk things out. And person who talks things out, you need to make sure to make a freaking appointment before you drop by. Don't just drop by because they don't like that. And I was just like, oh my gosh, how do they know what I do? How do they know I just go park myself in their office and have an impromptu meeting? So
I, no lie, sat in the branch manager of the bank that we use for 2 hours because I needed it fixed. There was nothing he could do, but I needed it fixed. And that's just funny because it's like, oh.
You just pop up and expect something to happen. It's like, this person was not prepared for you. Like, they have no idea where you're coming from. They had other plans. And you're like, pivot.
And then all of a sudden, I'm like, that's a really unique last name. Why do I know that last name? He's like, well, my mom was the attendance clerk at XYZ Elementary School. I'm like, that's it. Because that's where my son went for his special education program. And so then I'm relating to the guy. Now the guy realizes I know his mom like very well for 5 years. And he's like, well, crap, now I got to help this lady out.
And you're like, yeah.
There was nothing he could do. And so I just wound up stressing him out. I was stressed out. And it could have turned out much differently if,
yeah, you guys had each other's personality assessments.
Or not so much that, but if you understand yourself better.
Yes.
And you understand that not everybody works the same way you do, but in the heat of the moment, you're not always going to think that clearly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all these actions that I think are like great and needed, these check-ins that are non-productive, like after I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, why am I wasting everybody's time? And I just completely stopped. And now we have productive meetings with notes and a level 10, right?